You're going down, sucker.
Possibly live from the Ted Jones Broadcasting Center in Trophy Club, Texas. A guy who forgot to adjust his mic stand. It's the definitive quasi-independent podcast covering your world champion. It's burning in my brain. Can't help it. Your once upon a time world champion, Dallas Mavericks. It's the Mavericks Outsider Report. I'm Rylan Rowe. I do sports. Perhaps you're familiar with my work. Another man whose work I'm sure you're familiar with, joining me as always, the man at the helm, the mild-mannered reporter. You may know him as Ballin. I call him Brian. Ballin with Brian, Mr. Brian Gutierrez of MavsFastBreak.com, the two-man game, and your local bookstore. And I'm sounding really low on the treble. Who turned all my treble down? Who did that? Never mind. I don't know. I'm just so out of sorts, dude. We're in baby land and everything's crazy. I don't know what's going on. Episode 66. Welcome, one and all.
What's up?
I don't know, man. What is up? You tell me.
Well, we had the mic stand ready for Tim.
Yeah, as you can see on the stream, empty mic. It's Cyber Monday. You guys who've been with us for a long time may remember that Cyber Monday is a big day in the world of internet retail. And, sometimes it's been known to predispose one or more of us, and Tim is in that position today.
I think that's hokey, though. I think Cyber Monday's...
It is kind of hokey, but it's also like a huge day for internet traffic. So hokiness aside...
Every day is a huge day for internet
traffic. Yeah, but it's even huger.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So billions and billions served, kind of like McDonald's.
McDonald's. I had McDonald's earlier today.
Really? Here's my deal on McDonald's. You know, I only eat there once in a great while. Maybe like once or twice a year outside of in an airport. It's always your go-to in an airport because you just don't know
what else is going on.
You just don't know what's going to happen in the airport, and you don't know what you're going to be met with at the airport. But as far as McDonald's, it gets way too much hate. Look, people, McDonald's was not put there for you to eat every damn day. That guy, the supersize me guy, that crap was all the rage when I was in college. Everybody's like, oh, man, no, man, McDonald's is horrible. Didn't you hear about Super Size Me? This guy ate McDonald's every day and got fat. Well, no shit. I mean, come on, man. That's just, it's ridiculous.
That's common sense, right?
So don't dog on McDonald's. Just, it's there for what it is. If you're eating there very often, whether McDonald's is there or not, you're going to be making some poor choices.
I wonder if,
dietarily speaking.
I wonder if LeBron still eats regularly at McDonald's. Wasn't that a big thing for him? He had McDonald's.
I didn't know that.
I'll have to do some research on that.
No hate on McDonald's, man. It has its place in the world. And its place in the world is well below Whataburger.
You live awfully close to a Whataburger. I realized that today.
Yeah.
I think I actually live closer to one than you do.
Most people in metropolitan areas of Texas probably live really close to one, and their lives are made better for it. Whataburger is wonderful. Whataburger is everything we should strive to be in life.
I still wonder what life would be like if the AAC had a Whataburger like San Antonio does.
Man, why can't we have something like that? Why do we have to have Pira, Latin Fire, where nobody goes?
People go there. I don't know who.
Not when I walk by.
I don't know who.
Not when I walk by. You know why? Here's the problem with Dallas. We're just riffing right now. You know what the problem with Dallas is? Every time they try to put something in over there, it has to be all oomts. It's a sports venue, guys. There's only a small slice of the oomts market in the sports venue. Put in a freaking sports bar.
Isn't that what the old number 7 is to an extent?
Yeah.
A little bit?
Yeah, but it's kind of crowded. It's real nut to butt in there. That's there for like all the guys with bedazzled jeans and
the Ed Hardy shirts.
Yeah, Ed Hardy shirts. Well, not that I haven't gone in there and stuff, but
did you have to wear your affliction shirt when
No,
you went
but if you're in there after a game when it's really crowded. Not like a game like, I don't know, Saturday we left early. But normally a Laker game, I'd imagine it's pretty crowded. But, you know, on a standard everyday game, it's not that bad. But, you know, when they're trying to generate, you know, foot traffic and people and businesses booming, it's just too nut to butt. Now, the outside portion of it is a little better, but, you know, the weather can dictate that. Give me something else a little more, I don't know, just a little bit different flavor. Although it serves its purpose. I'm just saying you might get... There's a certain level of people that are going to just not even go there because of the Ed Hardy affliction connotation, even if it's really not all that bad. I don't think it's all that bad, but it's just, man, I'm 32. I'm not into the whole nut-to-butt bar scene. I need a bar scene with shoulder space.
What if they made the Pira into a Whataburger?
Then I would never leave.
No one.
I would immediately upgrade my season ticket.
It would be a 24/7 Whataburger.
What if it was open 24 hours a day?
24/7 Whataburger.
Then the entire Victory Development would take off. That would be the bell cow of the Victory Development right there. That would draw. They talk about drawing people in.
Mm-hmm.
Whataburger draws all.
It kind of does.
Episode 66, Mavericks Outside Report. It's Monday, November 26th. We are 15 games into the NBA season. Is that right?
Yep.
Mavericks are sitting at 7-8?
7-7.
7-7. Sorry, so we're 14 games in.
They're heading to 15.
Yeah, we're heading to 15. We're going to be talking about the most recent slate of games. Am I right in saying we only have two games to cover?
Yes.
Short schedule with the Thanksgiving holiday, so that's fun. That'll give us a little leeway to, you know, expound on some topics and get deep. Like Whataburger and demographics at the old number 7 club and oomps. So there's that. We'll have Nuggets. We got any white boy bracket progress?
We're going to get going on the white boy
bracket.
So
we got the white boy bracket going on. We're going to have Jeff Skinwade of ESPN 103.3 FM and your Mavs broadcast team jumping on in the second hour.
We've just
be
got
sure and stay
Emmy
tuned
Award
for that.
Winners all over the place.
Every week we have a different Emmy Award winner.
Still working on Harp.
It's pretty sad when like Mark Stein is the least decorated of you're up there. You're pulling some big guests.
We've got a lot of national people involved in this show.
I know. So be sure and fast forward at least if you don't care to hear what we have to say. At least fast forward to the second hour.
If you've listened to the past 12 minutes,
then you're here.
In.
You're here. You're clearly here for Skinny to come on second hour and talk hoops with us. And what else are we going to get into? Nuggets?
We're going to have Nuggets. We're going to have a mystery segment, which we haven't done in a while. Just riff-raff on a little bit of variety to end the show. Since we've got a little bit of a lighter week this week, like you talked about with Thanksgiving, so that'll be fun. We never know what we're going to talk about in that segment, so it'll be fun in that aspect. So let's go ahead and just get going with the two games that we have to talk about.
Okay.
It was a roller coaster of two games, basically.
Yeah, two games, two very, very different outcomes.
First one was Wednesday, the 21st, against the Mavericks against the New York Knicks. The Knicks came into town riding an 8-1 record. The only team they had lost to was the Memphis Grizzlies, who at the time had only lost one game, and that was opening night to the Los Angeles Clippers. So the Knicks had some pretty impressive wins leading up to the game against the Mavericks. They had wins over the Spurs, over the Heat, and then, of course, over the Mavericks. So it was going to be interesting to see. There are a lot of interesting storylines, some forced or fabricated leading up to the game. A big thing was whether, and we talked about it last episode, whether Jason Kidd would be booed or not. And I don't know what you...
Forced and fabricated.
Yes. I don't know what you thought or how, if they even talked about it during the broadcast. But to me, it seemed like he got a nice round of applause when he came into the game. I don't really think I heard boos. Or had booze at the time, but it felt like everyone was in the right frame of mind and recognized what Jason Kidd meant to the team and didn't really care about how he left.
What day was that?
Wednesday.
Oh, okay, yeah, I was cooking. I was starting my first day of 3 days of straight cooking, and so I didn't even catch the first part of the game, and not only did I not catch it, when I did watch, I had the sound turned down. Because I was watching in the kitchen. So I didn't hear what was said. I did catch the vibe on Twitter, which was generally that he was positively received. I'm sure our local broadcast guys, you know, said what you just said, which is that, you know, the guy's meant a lot to the franchise, was here obviously for our first title and his first title, and obviously was drafted by the Mavericks and so on and so forth. One of the best point guards to ever play in the NBA. You can't boo a guy like that. You just can't. But if you do, I don't care. But you just can't. It's just, and I didn't think people would, you know. There was a little bit of shadiness around why he left, well, the way he left. And we covered that on this show. And I don't know. But, again, I felt like he did the Mavs a favor. I didn't want to see him have a two-year deal with a third year. Obviously, the third year wasn't guaranteed or he would be here. That's my theory anyway. Mm-hmm. But he did us a favor by leaving in a way. We kind of needed to cut bait and move on. The decision was made with Jason Terry, and he was, I think, obviously a far more productive player, or geared to be a far more productive player going into this year. So, whatever, dude. The Boo thing was fabricated. Did you hear any?
I don't think I did. I just heard, like, maybe mixed sounds. Like, I don't know how to describe what the mixed sound would be. It would just be, like, an ooh or an ah.
Just a little bit of, kind of restlessness.
Random noises, basically, from Brick. But he got a nice reaction, and then it changed when the game started, because everyone, once the game starts, you're the opponent, and there's no more cheering, you're booed. It looked like it would be a rough game early, because the Mavericks fell behind by, I believe, as many as 10 points. It just seemed like New York was ready to go gangbusters.
For the majority of the first half, the Mavericks were fighting from behind. They were looking up at the Knicks, and you're right. If it got to double figures, it was brief or minor, but it felt like a 6-7, 10-point lead pretty much through the entire first half. I don't remember what the score. Do you have the box
28
up?
28-24 after the first quarter.
And after the second?
It was 54-49.
Yeah. Knicks. So, but you just kind of felt like the Mavs were just a half step behind. You mm-hmm. know, you didn't get the feeling that things were firing on all cylinders for them. And going on previous recent history, you're thinking, well, crap, you're down by five at half. Third quarter's coming along. You know, third quarters have been dog turds for the Mavs lately. And this third quarter defied history. This third quarter broke the mold a little bit. The Mavs had the upper hand in this third quarter, and really the third quarter against New York is where the game was decided. I mean, yep. You know, they had a good fourth quarter too, and you know, it came down to a close game, could have been a last second shot. But the game was won in the third.
Both teams shot over 55% in the third quarter, but the Mavericks were just a little bit more effective on that end in terms of scoring. They had 35 points in the third quarter alone, and the Knicks had 26. So while the Knicks were shooting 55% from the field, they only ended up getting 26 points, which isn't too terrible when you think about the shooting percentage. The big deal in the third was O.J. Mayo and Darren Collison really leading the charge there in the third quarter, where they had 22 points combined out of the 35.
Didn't Jay Crowder have like 9 or something in the third?
He had 6.
Oh, he had 6?
He had 6.
But, you know, he was a guy that got the start at the beginning of the third quarter mm-hmm. after starting the game on the bench and right. provided a spark, I felt like, in that third quarter.
And that's coming off the game where he didn't play at all.
Yeah.
Against Golden State.
Church will be ready. He's obviously been indoctrinated. Rick loves him for it. And I'm glad to see that. And thank you, Troy Murphy, for having your upper respiratory problem, because that was a spark, and that spark changed the tenor of the game. I mean, obviously, we can talk. I want to remind me to get back at some point, whether it's in another segment or this one, about Mayo and Collison.
Okay.
But it was a spark that helped to turn the game. So good for him, good for everybody.
When you heard about Troy Murphy starting, what were your thoughts?
I didn't really have a thought. I was like that guy.
So did you think of it more as Troy Murphy starting or Elton Brand's going to the bench?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. You want to talk about EB a little bit?
Sure.
I mean, I think as you look at the season, and on the post-game show on the Ticket, coming back from the game against the Lakers this past Saturday with Mark Falwell and Sean Bass, Mark made the point that with the way the schedule is shaping up and those guys, they only do a show after home games. And so they were mm-hmm. looking at, Mark was saying, man, it's going to be forever until we do more than one more. We got another show coming up next week. And then after that, it's going to be a long time. And mm-hmm. then by the time we have another show, you know, Dirk might be back. We're going to be talking about that. He said, when can we talk about giving the new acquisitions a little bit of a analysis, a little bit of a report card for this early in the season or whatever. And I didn't listen for long enough to find out what they did, but I don't know if they did or not, but it made me think, looking at who's come in and how they fit in. Elton Brand's at the bottom of the list.
He has to be.
And it's really kind of shocking to me, actually.
Yeah.
You know, he has a reputation. Obviously, he's got a long career in the league. He's been a multiple-time All-Star. He's been a 2010 guy. He's been a dependable guy, good defender. You know, as recently as last year, you know, his defensive qualities were, you know, well-documented in Philadelphia. And he's had health problems, but he kind of overcame them. He was healthy last year, had a productive year. Everybody knows him as a, you know, professional type of player. He's a smart guy, so you don't worry about him not having trouble picking up, you know, the way a new team operates or whatever, although I'm sure everybody has their challenges in that. You just didn't. If you had to pick somebody to be at the back of the class, it damn sure wasn't going to be him. Right. But he has. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what to make of it. I want to see what Skin says when he comes on here in a bit. But I don't know, dude. It's just weird. He's getting shots, and they're just not going in. And then defensively, he's just not amounting to much. And it's almost, I mean, defensively, the entire team has some issues to work through. And I don't know if you saw Tim McMahon's report on some of the things Rick said today,
right,
about their last couple days of practices, and what OJ Mayo said about Rick riding them pretty hard in the last couple practices. We can get into that too. And that all revolves around defense. But Elton Brand, being somebody who has a reputation of being an effective defensive player, has not brought it.
It's just surprising, because when I was wanting to do an analysis on him, I wanted to say, well, maybe this is a guy that is missing Dirk, because maybe that frees up some more space for him. But that's not the problem. He's gotten good looks at the basket.
His looks have been fine.
And they're just not going in. No. It's not even extending himself. He's not taking like 18-foot jumpers. It's like
you can't control what the ball is. It's crazy, man.
That's bad advice. I don't know. It could be good advice for Elton. I mean, he's getting looks 14, 15 feet away, and they're clean.
They are clean, and they're not going in.
And it feels like he's forcing it when he gets down low on the block. He'll get an offensive rebound, and he tries to out-fake everyone like six times. Just put it up.
And you'll see, I mean, again, like I said, we'll see what Skin thinks. I'm really interested to hear his opinion on it. But because of that, I have a hard time being worried, throw my hands up, give up on the guy. Mm-hmm. You know, Rick is responding accordingly. It's unfortunate that the Mavericks don't have somebody else there to fill that void outside of some weird combination of Troy Murphy or Brandon Wright, both of whom have flawed games in various aspects. So it sucks in terms of what you need out of the Mavericks personnel for him not to be living up to what it is you need from him. He's handling that well. I don't expect him to take it poorly. I expect him to work. And again, because his looks are so clean, it's almost like, well, you know, he can't keep this up forever. He can't shoot 34% all year, you know? So I don't want to be worried, but the thing that worries me is that I'm so damn mystified about why it's happening in the first place.
Right.
Why would a guy like that have a case of trying too hard or whatever? Because how else can you explain it other than just, I don't know.
He's emotionally invested in it. It's not like it's a Lamar Odom situation.
No,
from last
I mean,
year.
There's been stretches of games so far this year, the opening night game as one huge example, and there's been a couple others where he has defensively imposed his will on a stretch of possessions. It's been great. It's been exactly what you need from a guy that plays that position and what you need from him defensively. So I don't know, man. That's what just mystifies the hell out of me, and I don't know what to make of it. But again, I have reason to be optimistic, but I have reason to be so mystified that maybe you don't just run out. I understand he's 33. That's so old. You know, I'm going to be 33 in like 4 months. But you don't just run out of gas when it comes to hitting wide open 14-foot jumpers at 33.
Right.
You want to talk a little bit about rebounding and even defending bigger guys and hitting the wall. Okay, maybe there's a discussion to be had there. There was no evidence to believe it would be this abrupt and this drastic and happen right now, but maybe you could have that discussion. But as far as hitting an open 14-foot jumper, come on, there's dudes at your gym that are 54 that do that all day long, you know, and so it's certainly not going to leave this all-star.
I think it just is. I think we touched on this last week. I think it's just magnified based on the fact of
he's so badly needed.
Yes, yeah. And that any small mistake can balloon into a bigger issue based off of what's happening with this team, where they essentially have to play perfect basketball to thoroughly win and avoid any kind of holding on for dear life for a win. They have to play perfect, so when there's a mistake and a noticeable one, it's going to get blown up.
Yeah, it's just funny being a, you know, the like I said, the pros pro like Elton Brand to be the person who would be carrying that flag of having trouble handling that. I'm sure they're all affected by it to a certain degree. I mean, I don't know how you can't. It's like I think Rick said in the same story I was referencing earlier that Tim McMahon wrote about how the way we're constructed right now, we can't afford for anybody to not be providing maximum productivity.
Right. That goes with earlier in the season when he said we have to be a team of go-to guys. It's got to be everyone that does it. But it's just a rough situation. The only thing I can sort of try to compare it to is Vince Carter from last year, where he had to do too much over a long period of time, and it wore on him, and it wore on what he ultimately could have been as a player. And it kind of feels like that's the case right now.
He did, but remember early on, he was very productive. Remember, he had that role early last year as like the first quarter guy. I mean, there were several games in a row where he was in double digits in the first quarter. And that did, I think, eventually kind of wore him down. Mm-hmm. You know, Elton Brand hasn't even gotten to that point where he's been able to be productive enough to get worn down. Right. It's almost like it's just not happening, and it's just kind of snowballing. So, definite surprise there. Don't really know what to make of it, but you can make of it that Troy Murphy started that game against the Knicks, and that's the end result, and that's not good for Dallas in terms of trying to put the best team on the floor.
I don't think it ultimately hurt them in the scope of the game that Troy ended up playing. It's just that you can't keep a guy like Carmelo Anthony down
For forever.
He had 4 or 6 points in the first half, and then he just exploded in the third quarter. And it came down to having to hold on for dear life in the fourth quarter because Tyson Chandler kept on getting rebounds and no one wanted to foul him hard.
Tyson and one Chandler. You can't let that happen. They were killing Mavericks on the pick and roll. Mm-hmm. They couldn't do anything about it.
Right.
They just flat out couldn't do anything about it. And Carmelo bailed him out.
He really did.
He totally bailed him out at the end of that game. Chandler had 3 and-1s in the last, 4.5 minutes of that game?
Mm-hmm.
And just basically took over, had a couple plays at the rim defensively on top of that. So it was just putting his stamp on the game to the degree of a double-digit comeback. Because remember, we talked about the Mavericks being down double digits or near it in the first half. In the early fourth quarter, they got the lead up to 12 or something, didn't they?
Yeah, I think it was
10 or 12.
I'm checking it right now.
His momentum there alone, I felt, in the fourth quarter with all those three-point plays, you know, erased that deficit super fast.
They had it up to 12.
And there you go. Carmelo starts trying to play a little hero ball, which is, you know, we know that's what he does. He's a really good basketball player, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good basketball player, Brian.
I would agree with that assessment.
So you came to expect it, but damn, dude, you were killing us with that pick and roll. Why'd you stop?
They didn't work off the pick and roll. It was just straight up Mm-mm. ISO, Mm-mm. Yeah. And he had the step on Marion. He had it, and I think Vince was trapped under the basket. I think it was a switch, or they were just playing small at the time. So Vince was the last line of defense. So Carmelo could have just gone aggressive to the rim, but he pulled up, and he did a double clutch.
You know, I think sometimes with guys like that, they've been in that position so many times over the years where they are in a last-minute possession or last 30 seconds possession. It's a rhythm thing. They have two steps, escape dribble, you know, I'm going to take a shot, whatever, and it just almost everything else, all they see is kind of, you know, that athlete tunnel vision.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they see is the basket, and they're super focused. And when you're as good as a Carmelo Anthony or someone of his type, you know, more often than not, you end up getting a good shot off. Whether it goes in or not, it's a different story. But you end up getting a decent shot off, and you don't always take the optimal shot or the optimal decision, but you get a good enough shot that it goes down as the great player tried to make a play. And in this case, it went the Mavericks' favor. They got out of there with a win.
114-111.
It's one of those where if it wasn't a home game, you'd be like, well, get the buses up and warmed up and let's get out of here. So
it ended up being a nice win, though, all things considered, even though it got a little tense or scary in the fourth quarter. But it was a good win. I mean, Jason Kidd still had a really big impact on that game, even though he really didn't do a whole lot.
Some nice set shot three-pointers.
Got some steals out of that.
He got a few steals.
Two.
Took advantage of the Mavericks leaving him alone out there on the three-point line, which everybody does. And
it doesn't matter what.
Still makes you pay.
Doesn't matter what uniform you're wearing, you're going to get open shots with Jake Kidd.
But again, I don't know if you agree, but Mavericks are better off. He did them a favor.
Yeah, I agree.
The contract he was offered by Dallas was a...
Was it an albatross?
No, it's not big enough to be an albatross, but it was a... It was a gesture. It was partially, we're going to pay you to do what it is you do, but it was also a gesture of goodwill as far as this is what you've done for the franchise. We want you to retire Mav. You know, a little extra, maybe a little extra than what he was worth to Dallas right now. He may be worth that to the Knicks right now, given where they're at. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Where the Mavs are right now and the way things are shaping up, they're way better using this year to see what they've got in Darren Collison. And I'm glad they are. And that reminds me to remind you to remind me to talk about him and Mayo, but first we got to talk about this debacle of a Laker.
We're
going to
briefly touch over this one because there's just not too much to say, really. It was
we'll be done in about a minute.
They just got hit over the head hard.
Terrible.
In the first quarter, and they did not stand a chance. It was the final was 115-89, but even that score isn't indicative of how bad of a beating it was. They were outscored 36-23. In the first quarter.
So midway through the third, because I had season tickets for 5 years before Courtney came along, or 4 years, I'd have to do the math. And then this is like our fourth or fifth season together, probably fifth season together. So yeah, fifth. So
is that how y'all do years? Season?
Number of seasons, number of Mavs games. So I had to explain to her in the first season when you decide when to leave a game. Because there will be times when she'll be like, oh, are we going to go? And she's a big fan. I mean, but she's more, I tell her sometimes she's got college football brain, where one loss is just like, oh, God, you know, get real frustrated. And I'm like, you know, you've learned over the years, she's learned basketball, baseball. She's learned to take losses better. We talked about this driving home. But she would be ready to leave. And so I'd kind of be like, no, you know, I've seen, you know, the Mavs came down from 22 in Minnesota in 2002, I think.
They've done it against Toronto almost every year.
Do it every year against Toronto. Right. They came down from down from 14 with a minute and something in 2001. I mean, all these crazy things have happened. Reggie Miller, you know, I give the examples. Mm-hmm. So midway through the third quarter, look up. I'm on the phone. I'm so frustrated. I'm phoning. And she says, are you just waiting for the Lakers to have double the number of points that the Mavs have? And I look up, and it's 82-48.
It's pretty damn close.
Which wasn't even their largest lead, because their largest lead was 37.
It was 37.
There is absolutely nothing redeeming. I even tweeted that I felt sorry for anybody that had to file a story on that game. There's nothing redeeming to take from it. I mean, Brian, what we do every week is we get in here and we try to nerd out on Mavs stuff. We try to go deeper on what the Mavs are doing, on just basketball fandom, and we'll take any one little thing and try to think about something that we can discuss and what it means for the future, or what it means for what the team did in a given game, X's and O's, whatever. Man, there's nothing.
It was terrible.
There's nothing.
There was just
one of the worst. Can you think of a worse game?
I was thinking about it during the game.
In the Dirk era?
No, I can't think of one that was just flat out butt ugly. And awful. I'm not going to say who was involved, but a lot of the members of the media were like, I'm checking out on this game. It's a great night for college football watching.
Basically. Oh, yeah, you had USC and Notre Dame facing off.
It was just bad. I mean, when Meta World Peace or Ron Artest, whoever you want to call him, ends up with 16 points in the first quarter, you're in trouble. It was 23-16 Mavericks over Meta World Peace.
You're down like nearly 20 before Kobe Bryant like even took a shot.
Right.
That's Kobe, dog.
It's bad.
I have literally nothing to add. The only thing I have to add, one thing I will say, and it was brought up to me by one of the chiropractors at my chiropractor's office today.
How many chiropractors do you have?
I have one, but he's the other guy, and he's a big Mavs fan. And he and I were talking about the game, and he said that he thought Antawn Jamison looked a lot better for the Lakers in this second game. Mm-hmm. And I had to agree. That's a guy who I think was really underrated when they picked him up. He's a guy who can get a lot of garbage points, and with all the firepower on that team, he fills gaps. He's an offensive sprayed insulation. Remember we said how Sean Marion was just generally sprayed insulation, filling the gaps? Antawn Jamison really geometrically is that guy when it comes to the shots that he finds and makes. And so I think he's a perfect fit for that team, and he definitely, I mean, he had like, 12 points and 11 boards in like a quarter and a half.
At halftime, he had 11 and 11.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Double-double at halftime.
Nothing. Nobody played well. I'll tell you what, Jay Crowder looked decent. Nice. Bernard James looked good for Bernard, and
that's it.
There was long stretches of time where your lineup was Jay Crowder, Bernard James, Roddy, Dojo, and Vince Carter.
It's just a punt team.
And you're like, poor Vince. I mean, he's got to go try and run all these knuckleheads around.
He gets his shots, though, in that lineup.
Sure does.
That's for sure.
He's not letting any of them go.
I thought about this leading up to the show. I thought it would be interesting just to hear Sean Marion's point of view for this game. So let's go ahead and hear what Sean had to say after the game against the Lakers.
It's an old-fashioned ass whooping. That's what it was. keep it real. You know, sitting here and beating around the bush. They whooped our ass tonight. Mm-hmm. Just that simple. And you know, and much you can put on it. You know, I think we got to come here and go to work tomorrow.
Is there anything specifically on defense that just wasn't working?
I mean, when people get straight lanes to the basket, ain't no help for that. Defense assignments for that. So, you know, coach told us to guard our man, and you know, help's gonna come when you make them. You know what I'm saying? Take angles and get to the basket. But when they get a straight line to the basket, hell, you can't help for that. Well, we gotta, you know what I'm saying, take the challenge of guarding our guys, and everything else gotta, you know what I'm saying, the effort gotta be there. You know, it wasn't there tonight. They came out and they won it. I guess they made sure they wanted to get their first one on the road this season, and they got it.
Do you feel like there were signs of a night like this coming for you guys defensively?
I don't know. Signs of what? You know, I think, these days you just want to win, you know, and you can get them how you get them. Mm-hmm. And I think at times, you know, I think, some nights are easier than others, of course, you know, but at the same time, it's only you can't control when you're making shots or anything else, but you can't, only one thing you can't control, that's your effort, you know, on the floor. Just playing hard and just seeing, make things happen. You know, I think that's the biggest thing with a young team like we have here. I think we have a tendency to let the offense dictate everything for us. Mm-hmm. Now, I think when you understand the game, more so, there's other things you can do on the floor to make yourself better, make your teams make better when you're not scoring the ball. And that's when we're going to get better as a team and learn this game of basketball.
After it started snowballing, was there some woe is me out there?
Huh?
After it started snowballing, could you see that there was some feeling sorry for yourselves?
Sorry for nobody. It is what it is. We professionals. Hell, we got our ass whooped. I mean, but don't sugarcoat it. You know what I'm saying? Don't start to sit here and say we didn't. They did this right, and we did all these things wrong. We came and we showed up. That was it. You know, I mean, we can all look at ourselves and say that, you know, what we do. We can all help each other definitely and get better at this game. But you know, they wanted it, and they made sure they came out and showed it from the jump, and we couldn't respond to it.
He makes a good point that you don't think of in terms of defensive scheming is concerned, but when you do give your guy a straight on lane to the basket, it is hard for somebody to help.
Right.
You can't. There's no angle there.
Right.
Great point. And it just brings home what Rick, I'm sure, drove into those guys all the last couple days, which is defensive effort on your man. It starts everything. That's where everything begins, and you can't expect to get good results if you don't have that. The best thing about
I like milk drinkers, but I don't like too many milk drinkers. You know,
he doesn't, and I appreciate that about him. The thing about sports is, and this is, you know, in the same way that we have almost nothing to say about this game, nothing can be taken from it. That works both ways. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that you can, that it's just cause for hanging your head and trying to put the judgment on this team in terms of what happened just from this game. That's the beauty of sports, is that nights like this happen. Remember the Mavs beat the Knicks by 48 or whatever it was, right, a couple years ago?
Right.
Nights like this will happen. In this case, it happened negatively from the Mavs standpoint, and the nice thing is, you get to go, you got a couple days to practice, and you have a game tomorrow?
Yes.
You have a game tomorrow, and you in Philadelphia?
Yes.
And you get to try to redeem yourself.
Before we move on to what we need to remind you about the reminding of the reminder, Landry
Locker,
friend of the show, yes, wanted to clarify that.
ESPN 103.3, Ben and Skin Show.
End of the locker room.
End of Landry's locker room. 10 a.m. every day?
10:30.
10:15, 10:30.
Just
look, listen.
Listen
all 3 hours, of course.
He wanted to clarify and say it was Ocho Cinco, who's the guy that eats McDonald's all the time.
Oh, okay, there you go.
And he's out on the street now.
So. Yeah, he is. There's another guy who is old, but not very much older than me. This just keeps happening. Every year, there's more and more guys that are old in sports, and they're not very much older than me. Like, I was trying to explain how old Brand is, and I'm like, well, he's close to my age. Oh, shit. That's not good. You know, he's younger than Tim. Tim just turned 34 a couple months ago, so if Tim was here to defend himself, not even a couple months ago, like a few weeks ago. So if Tim was here, pour out, should have had an empty bottle, an empty 40-ounce sitting here. But anyway, if he was here to defend himself, he could stick up for that. I do remember what I told you to remind me about, but you want to take a quick break first?
Sure.
All right. We're going to take a break. I forgot to cue music up.
And then we're going
to
talk about the reminder of the reminder of the reminder. And I'm guessing it's going to be awfully awesome.
No, it's really not. Oh. But it's just a good sport.
Well, we just needed to hype it a little
it's
bit.
It's a good sports point. We'll take 10 minutes or so on it, and then we'll bring on Jeff Skinwade of the Ben and Skin Show, and he'll carry us for a little while.
All right. Sounds good. Mavericks Outsider Report.
There's a dude. Can't think of his name right now. What is that guy's name? Oh, Max Tannone, I think is how you say his last name. T-A-N-N-O-N-E.
Okay.
If you look him up on the interwebs, you'll find a website where he's got these mashups like this where he'll take two tracks from the same artist and mash them up, or he'll take, like, I think he kind of made his name on Jadeohead. Yeah, we got some candy in the house. Jadeohead, which you can guess is Jay-Z on top of Radiohead tracks.
I was going to say Jadakiss.
Oh, yeah, of course, because he's such a storied rapper. But anyway, some good stuff, and that's what this came from. This is called...
What was his first name again?
Max.
Max.
Max Tannone, T-A-N-N-O-N-E. Google it. Use the Google.
Plan on it.
Thank Al Gore.
All right, we'll.
And welcome back. Mavericks Outsider Report episode 66.
Almost choked on that.
Brian's choking on candy.
That's hard to do.
We just broke down. We just took 45 minutes to break down. Well, no, we got started late. We just took 38 minutes to break down.
Well, we also talked about burgers.
That's
and
right. So we just took 22 minutes to break down two games. It's not so bad when you put it that way.
Yeah.
We're back. We're talking ball. That's kind of what we do here. And to wrap up this first hour, I told you to remind me of something, and it was Collison and Mayo.
Yes.
Those two guys, and you know I am an old, try to be an old school basketball guy.
Old man sports fan.
Old man sports fan. But, and it, so it defies my nature because I want everything to start at the bottom. I need the fan on. I know you're cold, but.
I'm not cold. I'm going to be cold when I leave
cold
this place.
Outside.
Yes,
okay.
Which I hate.
Yep. So,
what happened today? Where did that cold front come from?
The north. So, anyway, it belies my nature to admit this, but because I want everything to start with the big men and work not inside out from a standpoint of how you execute an offensive possession, but inside out in terms of everything starts there with what the guys' jobs are on the court, what you need them to do, the weight that they pull, the load that they carry, how they produce one way or another, whether it's defensively or offensively, depending on the team, depending on the personnel, whatever. I don't like it because I'm an old man inside on the inside when everything starts with the guards. But this team, there are two different teams inside of this team. This team is a Gemini. There are two teams inside of this team. And the one team that we all know and love and want to see more of is the team that exists when Mayo and Collison both play well at the same time.
Yeah.
Now, Mayo's been more consistent than Collison this year. He hasn't dropped too many stinkers. He's had a few. Collison's had 50-50, 60-40.
He's had some rough patches.
You know, he's had some good games and some bad. But when they both, the games where Collison's been kind of iffy and Mayo's still been himself, those are the games where I think we kind of see what we believe the Mavs to be. They are who we thought they were.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis Green kind of thinks maybe that's what he thinks they are, which is this sort of middle-of-the-road 500 team that can play above their heads sometimes, and that's what gets them to be 7-7. When they're both clicking, that's when we see that team that was 4-1. That's when we see the team that beat the Lakers on opening night. That's the team that we saw that was able to hold off the Knicks. Collison ended up with like 17 points in that game or mm-hmm. something. And obviously Mayo, 27 points, had a great game. So when they both have a poorly statistical game, like the case this past Saturday against LA. I mean, you looked up at one point, and I think between them, they had like 4 points, and it was a third quarter. I mean, it was bad, and it does happen. There's probably been four of those games this year,
yeah.
I feel like, or three, where they've both been totally off. So one out of every five or six games, four or five games. Man, you can't get this team can't do anything because there's no depth. There's nothing.
They have depth, but it's not one you can rely on to carry
the load.
Well,
every team has 15 players.
Right, but they've got guys, if everyone's working together, they're nice accessory pieces. I mean, they've had games where they have five guys scoring in double figures, and they're winning those games. So they have the depth to make it work when it's actually thriving. But I agree with your point that there are two different teams within this one team. And I think it actually makes a lot of sense that this team is dramatically different when Mayo and Collison are working together, because they are the guys that you have to rely on the most right now, because Kamen is still trying to figure out what he is on this team. I mean, in the half court, you can just throw him the ball and he'll figure something out, but it's going to change over the course of the year, and he's still trying to get back into shape.
He's feeling his way out as far as when to assert himself right. offensively, when not to, finding his spots on the floor easily. He's finding them now, but not always in the most easy way. You know, sometimes it's kind of, you know, a circuitous route to where we need to go.
You're saying those words today, dude.
Yeah, I'm just vocabulary and all up in
Dictionary.com was all over you today.
So you do see that, and we at some point need to talk about the Mavs offense in general, and maybe that's something good to talk to Skin about. But, you know, I just feel like he's feeling his way out, and he's still able to produce, although he had one of the worst games probably of his career the other night too, as did Elton Brand. It's like everybody had a career worse. But anyway, the productivity, the stat sheet filling up, you're right, is going to come from Mayo, Collison. Collison's just a cog that you have to have do that. When you talk about guys across the board, you're thinking depth in terms of balance.
Right.
In terms of – and every team's better, with the exception of the teams with crazy superstars. Every team's better when they have that going for them, or when they have that going for the tier of players after that crazy superstar. So, sure, that goes without saying. Makes sense. I agree. Problem is – those guards, they initiate everything offensively. Mm-hmm. They dictate the pace. When the Mavs are aggressive offensively, they're a completely different team. They're great offensively, or they can be great. When they're not aggressive, and it's hard to be aggressive pulling the ball out of your own basket.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard to be aggressive doing that, but you did. You know, when those guys are aggressive, things are way different. But when they're not able to produce and things bog down, you don't have anybody you can really turn to.
Easy to suck in on them.
You've got Vince Carter, who's really more of a small forward and plays more of a small forward role with this team. And then beyond that, I mean, you got thin. The guard spots are just thin. They just are.
I mean, when you talk about it that way, for when they're playing well together, if Mayo is shooting well, he's going to attract a double team. So that's going to open something up for someone else. If Collison is able to hit a couple jumpers or just get to the rim, that's going to change the defense's attention, where they've got to collapse on the lane and make sure that Collison doesn't have his way. So it goes hand in hand. If those guys are working well, it's going to open things up for everyone else. But if it's not working, it's like what we said. If any
you
one
have
part
no fallback,
yeah. If any one part falls, the whole thing is going to fall.
Yeah, and the one thing I think that they could do better, that was evident in spades on Saturday, but it's also been evident in some of their other games where they've not played so well. Saturday was just an outlier. Saturday was just
the tape, a
magnification of everything that could go wrong with this team. But I've seen it in other games as well, which is, you're talking about Collison. Mayo attracts attention. Collison finds a seam. He finds an open spot on the floor. If he takes three or four of those, you know, 13 to 18 footers, and they don't go for him, put your head down, brother, and right. put the ball on the floor. I don't care. He didn't do that against the Lakers at all. Nothing. And I understand there's Dwight Howard or whoever down there, but look, if you're not hitting that shot, the guy is not a shooter. He's a guy who can shoot the ball sometimes. You know, we got a lot of those. We don't have a lot of shooters. We got a lot of guys who can shoot the ball mm-hmm. sometimes. You know, who can put the ball in their hand and do this, and the ball goes in an arc and it clangs off the rim. We got a crap load of those guys. You've got to have it in your mind that if you don't have it going, if your rhythm's not there, which it definitely wasn't for him against LA, and I've seen it in other games as well, you've got to put the ball on the floor. You've got to be aggressive and get to the basket. Generally speaking, good things are going to happen. You're young enough, quick enough, you can do it. You can make a decision. You can get down there and pass out. You can do something. Just, you know, have a bailout position. Too many times did I see Darren Collison, his move as a point guard would be to, after he brings the ball down, just kind of dart over to one side and then just pass the ball right back where he came from to whoever was out there in the bailout spot, no matter who it was. Dude, that's what I do. Except I don't do it behind the back, unless it's my left hand, because I'm left-handed. But he doesn't. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, do you see this? I probably saw it in six different possessions in LA, mm-hmm. Against LA, where He's not real sure where to go. The Mavs don't really have anything decisive cooking offensively that I can decipher. Maybe there's something going on that someone with a little better X's and O's knowledge can, but from my eyeballs aren't telling me we got anything really serious going on. He kind of halfway makes a decision, kind of darts over to the wing, doesn't penetrate, but just kind of scoots over and passes right back out of it. And it's just like, man, come on, that's what I do at the gym. I need something else. I need, and this gets into my Mavericks offensive execution point of I don't understand what it is they're trying to do at any given point.
One of the things that I noticed about him when it was announced that he was going to come to the team is that he had a floater in his arsenal, but we just don't see it that much. It's either all or nothing. He either tries to get to the rim or it's a pull-up jumper, and he just doesn't show that.
Well, floaters are tough. You know, there's not a lot of guys that have one, so if he's not comfortable pulling it out, that's probably an indication that it's not ready for prime time, or he may not really have it. That may have been on the box of ingredients, but it may have been way there down towards the bottom. I think that's my phone.
Oh, okay.
I got iPhone money now. Me and Martellus Bennett. So me and Marty B got iPhone money and some Rocket Dope t-shirts.
How much do you think this team, how heavy is this team in terms of if the offense isn't flowing, it's just sucky?
It is. It's just offensively, it's just fart and fall down when they don't, and I guess that's what, and you know, we can take it a break here shortly so we can get Skin on, but I would like to get his take on that. Is that, you know, I don't understand what they want to do. Like, I know what they want to do when they're aggressive. I think we talked about it a little bit last week about how much better they look when it's two passes and a shot, when the decisions that need to be made are obvious. They're a much better team. And, you know, that's characteristic of a team with a young point guard. It's characteristic of a team with guys that aren't used to playing with one another. I understand all that. So those are side effects that I think we should expect. But, you know, when you have time to set it up, I don't know what you're trying to do. I mean, and LA again is a horrible example of a game, but it's the game that's freshest in my mind, so I got to use that as an example. Three dribbles, pull up, and shoot a jumper. Can't have that. You just cannot have that in the NBA. Do something else. Run it through somebody, something. Run somebody off of a screen somewhere. Try to get somebody open. Get somebody some type of dribble penetration, anything.
There's
something.
I think that goes along the lines of they don't know what their identity is on offense. They don't know who their go-to guy is. I mean, Mayo is the guy that's scoring the most points, but there's times where he could be even more assertive, maybe just attacking the rim because he can get to the rim and pass it off to someone if the defense collapses. But they don't do that, and then they look at Kamen, and he can score, obviously, like we've talked about, but he's unsure of how much he needs to do that, like you talked about. But it's just weird. They don't know who their go-to guy is.
Yeah, and you know, I don't have expectations that with all new guys and with Dirk not being there and with the young point guard who's inexperienced and going through growing pains that they're going to just
be this
well-oiled machine. But I do expect that when they have 7 terrible possessions all in a row that they can kind of regroup without having to have Rick call a timeout and regroup them forcefully. You know, regroup and run a set and know who you're going through. You know, run it through Kamen. Do something, anything. Get head of steam, head down to the basket, anything. I'm going to be looking for that in Philly and Chicago.
And also, before we go to break it, and also we're kind of emphasizing offense, but obviously they're looking at it the wrong way. They're looking at their offense to get things going, but it clearly has to be the defense.
Absolutely. And when are they at their best? When they're able to be aggressive. And like I said 2 minutes ago, you can't be very aggressive when you're pulling the ball out of the net every time, can you, Brian?
You cannot.
You cannot. So why don't we take a break?
Yeah.
We're going to come back on the other side of this break, second hour, with Jeff Skinwade of ESPN 103.3 FM, Ben and Skin Show, and the Mavs broadcast team.
Emmy Award winner.
He is an Emmy Award winner and generally just a triple threat. So we'll have him on and talk basketball. And Brian's doing I don't know what to the mic, the wind fuzzy thing, windscreen fuzzy thing. So, all right, break it up.
Mavericks Outside Report. Interview coming.
Well, look at that. Song ended just perfectly on time.
Nice.
I didn't even plan that.
That's synergy.
How could you even plan that, Brian?
You can't.
We're back. Mavericks Outsider Report, episode 66.
Yes.
Second hour is upon us. We've been talking about basketball. Mavs basketball.
Whataburger.
Whataburger.
Jeans.
Jeans.
Affliction jeans.
Oh, yeah.
No, affliction or star-studded jeans,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, bedazzled. Bedazzled yeah. jeans. Yes. And so to bring things into, you know, a little more basketball-centric than bedazzled jeans, we have a guest with us, one of our favorite guys to have on the show, good friend of ours. He is of ESPN Radio, 103.3 FM's Ben and Skin Show, your Mavs broadcast team.
Emmy Award winner.
Emmy Award winner. It's Jeff Skin Wade. How you doing? He just says, How you doing, man?
It's good to be here. A little disappointed that I missed out on Jeans Talk. Thought you guys were going to bring me on so I could talk a little Vidal Sassoon and things like that. I don't know what happened.
You're welcome to riff.
Yeah, you can give your insight on bedazzled jeans if you want to start us off.
It's a podcast, so we have no format, so it's whatever.
I do not like the hey, guys, I'm sorry to kill you. Are you guys getting that horrible feedback coming back? Am I, like, echoing back in your ear?
You are not.
No, we're good.
Okay, good. Sorry. Now I can really go off on jeans that have designs on the butt. I just think that, you know, the jeans you wear, the butt should not look like a constellation. I think that that's a bad approach in general. And any time there's some sort of intricate thing designed to pull attention to your butt, I think there's very few people that can pull those off, and I personally don't even know them. So I think just going with more traditional jeans is the way to do that.
And this
thing.
Is
that's my opinion.
This is for men, I assume.
Yeah. Girls can do whatever.
Yeah, they can do whatever they want. It doesn't matter. It's what's inside that inside the jeans, not inside. Come on.
Right. I'm all about the personality of their jeans. I don't really care.
Yeah, it really needs to stop. You can't be having, you know, accoutrements on your clothing, adornments, if you will. It just is taking fashion in a direction that we really don't want to go.
That's right. Hey, let's talk basketball. All right, sorry, I brought the whole jeans thing up. That was
no, it's cool. One of the questions I wanted to ask you, I kind of randomly threw out on Twitter during the Lakers game because obviously there was not a lot really to talk about in terms of positive news during that game. And I know y'all were trying to figure out what to talk about during that second half of that game. But one of the questions I threw out was, what has been the bigger surprise so far through 14 games? Has it been the fact that Brand has been such a bad shooter or that Mayo has been such a good shooter? Which one is more surprising?
Wow, I like that. I guess I would say that Brand has struggled probably for me just because – you know, it's not like we're on a 40-game stretch here with Mayo shooting, you know, 50% from three. You know, he's red hot right now, and I imagine he would come back to earth a little bit, although, you know, he's looked way, way better than I thought he would look. The Brand thing is pretty mystifying because, you know, he's just missing stuff I've always seen him make. Not that I, like, you know, watched a ton of Sixers games last year, but I watched enough of them, and those little shots in the elbow area or the little 45-degree angle from 12 feet out. He's always made that stuff. And it's just, I mean, and you know, a lot of people said, man, he looks dead to me. He looks like, you know, he's done. I'm like, man, this is just post-Achilles Elton Brand. It's not like he's had all this lift the last couple of years and suddenly this year it's not there. To me, you know, physically he didn't look that much different than what I saw last year, but shots that he made last year aren't going in. I think it's making it really difficult for Rick to keep him in. And, you know, the flip side is you have, B. Wright, who's not really rebounding very well at all. So that's keeping him from being in. And, you know, they're kind of waiting, I guess. Troy Murphy had a couple games where he was draining some threes. But for the most part, you know, he's been missing. He's been rebounding a little bit. But they just can't really find, you know, consistent power forward minutes or backup center minutes. And, you know, it's certainly been a big problem here in the first few weeks.
And I know Skin, or I'm sorry, Rylan wanted to dig into your Skin brain for some more science on Elton Brand, so I'll let him continue.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what we were talking about earlier. The thing I said was, you know, if you do start to think he's done, well, being done, typically the ability to shoot and make an open 14-foot jumper isn't the first thing that goes, you know. So
right.
it's uncharacteristic. So I told Brian that, you know, because of that, I don't really I'm not ready to just write him off and say, well, he can't be productive here. But on the other hand, it's so mystifying that I really don't know what to think. And
that's a good point. It's like, you know, at some point he is going to be way more of a negative than a positive, because every player is at some point. What is he, 32? Is that how old Brand is?
33.
Yeah.
Oh, he's 33 now. I mean, he should be able to still contribute at the age of 33, just because his game doesn't rely on athleticism. It hasn't for a long time. It relies on smarts and positioning and, you know, him being able to knock those shots down. And so he's not giving you really any of that right now. He's really kind of struggling. But, you know, the other thing is, to not get all caught up in, he's still, even struggling right now, he's still a $2 million player, which is essentially what they're paying because of the amnesty situation.
Right.
So I suspect he'll be a contributor by the end of the year. It's just right now, he's just, man, the guy's not playing well.
One of the things that we kind of alluded to at the end of our last segment was that this team doesn't really feel like it has an identity. And I wanted to see what you thought about that in terms of their identity. And I know it's not really a major point of emphasis to have one right now when their biggest piece is obviously sitting on the sidelines unable to play. But what are you seeing from the team right now in terms of what they're trying to do on offense?
Offensively, they're a pretty big mess. You know, I've been thinking about this a little bit lately. What Rick asked the point guard to do is, it sounds like something that they would love, and it sounds like something that's very easy, but I think it's actually, unless you're a real top-shelf player, it's very difficult to pull off, and that is to play sort of a smart freelance type of basketball. Like, you know, there's any number of teams where a guy just rolled the ball out and said, all right, go play. And, you know, you take the good with the bad in that situation. You know, it's like, all right, we're just going to go jack up a bunch of shots and see what happens. Yeah, like old Mav fans, I don't know if you guys are old enough to remember when Dick Motta was here for his second tenure and they had the three J's. And Motta literally just rolled the ball out and said, all right, go get them, boys. And it was crazy as hell. And, you know, sometimes just their, you know, talent, youthful energy and all those sort of things help them win games. But a lot of times it's kind of a mess. And that's not what Rick is asking his team to do. He's asking his team to be spontaneous in an organic sort of way, to where, you know, guys have tendencies. You know, you won't hear him talk about plays. You'll hear him talk about actions, which, you know, this is a real, you know, kind of departure, you know, from sort of the old basketball way of thinking with these distinct sets. And, you know, I would just equate it to guys that play pickup basketball with each other all the time, and they know what each other want to do. Because, and he made note of this in one of the pre-games earlier in the year, the whole idea that, you know, once you get to the playoffs, the scouting is so intense and advanced that it's very difficult to just sort of run your sets. So you have to, you know, you have to have an emphasis on defending so that you can get transition and you can get shots before the defense can set up. And, you know, and really, I think in the last half decade or so, probably more, I think pick and roll defense has really become more and more advanced, and, you know, where guys on all over the floor, very, you know, for good teams at least, are dialed in on how to stop that and what the responsibilities are and when to scramble and rotate and all those kinds of things. So if you can get offense out of guys just being smart, creative offensive basketball players, that's the way to go, right?
Right.
You know, because you can't set up to help defense so much, and it's really just more reactionary. But the problem with that is guys being accustomed to one another and making plays that work in the NBA. And I think a lot of that comes with experience. Not that Darren Collison's some, you know, kid off a boat, never seen the NBA before, but that's a challenging thing to ask a guy to do. I don't think Darren Williams or Chris Paul are one of those types of guys that have any problems with it. But I think sort of a medium-level talent player like Darren Collison, I think that's one of the reasons why you see him so hesitant. Like he'll either be, like, way over-aggressive, and sometimes it's worked that. There's a couple times where he's just gone, like, one-on-three, and you're like, okay, what's this guy doing here? And then there's other times where he's not quite sure where to go. And, you know, I think it's kind of like a feeling-out process. And so I think that's one of the reasons, you know, you've heard Rick reference how much time he spent watching film with Collison, both defensively and offensively, so he can kind of communicate to him, it's not like going out on the floor and going, all right, here are these specific sets, and this guy sets this pick, and there's a down screen, and you pop up here, and then this guy cuts through here. It's more, where am I going to get the ball to certain guys on the floor? This guy's going to naturally go to this area, and then once he goes here, this guy, you know, it's more just like a general understanding of playing smart basketball. And I love it because, you know, it gives players a lot of freedom. But once you give them a lot of freedom, you know, you put a lot of, I guess, importance on them to make the sort of right kind of decisions. And as far as I can tell, you know, just trying to read body language and that sort of thing, Paulson just doesn't look comfortable doing it yet. I'm not saying he won't be. Just right now, you know, he's just real hit and miss in terms of just his comfort level. And you can always tell, like, with point guards, they're the easiest players, for me at least, to read body language. You know, you can just tell, like, their posture when they handle the ball. You know, you can see hesitancy in their body. I mean, we've seen this with Roddy B for 3 years. He's still uncomfortable unless he's just going to go straight, you know, 1-on-4. Mm-hmm. And then yeah. You get a lot of crazy Roddy shots. So I think, personally, that their biggest problem offensively, aside from the obvious of not having Dirk out there to rely on, is I think Collison trying to figure out just exactly who he's supposed to be and how he's supposed to play within this offense, I think, has probably been the biggest thing for me.
You probably remember some of the things that were said, Skin, in Rick's first season here with respect to Kidd. And I remember there being a story somewhere in the middle point of that first season or even early on in that first season Rick was here where, you know, everybody wrote their story of, okay, Rick has handed the reins over to Kidd. And there was yep. There was the period before that where he, quote, hadn't. How do you, based on what you just said now, how do you compare having not handed over the reins to Kidd and what that meant relative to what he has handed over to Collison at this point? Because obviously Kidd is the epitome of what you would have in a point guard to hand the offense over to. And yet,
yeah, you know, I've got a couple ideas on this. You know, this is just my own speculation. I remember, you know, we're talking about, you know, the Rick situation. I'm talking about a team I wasn't following closely. I just went back and read a lot of stuff. But, you know, Rick was trying to open things up and do some of that sort of stuff as last year in Indiana, but it was Jamal Tindley he was doing it with. Mm-hmm. And I think that there was probably some, you know, a little trepidation and just the tendency to pull it back in. And I think, you know, when Rick first got here, I don't know if you guys remember this, but they were going to run the Princeton.
Oh, yeah.
And they spent about, I don't know, 3 weeks or whatever it was, half a training camp trying to run it. And then they just said, all right, no, get rid of all this. And the thing about the Princeton is, you know, I there was just so much overreaction in L.A. It's a great offense. And it takes a while to get a hang of. But the reason it's so good is because, you know, we're talking about that idea of actions. Once you have guys that can run it, then basically there's like 3 and 4 different reads off of every place that the ball goes. It's a lot like the triangle in that regard, where, you know, we're talking about motion offenses, but it's sort of like, you know, what you would call a read and react type of offense where, okay, I'm going to go here with the ball, and depending on what the defense does, this player can go one of three different ways. And so what it takes is it takes, one, good post passers, which is why, you know, Princeton, I don't know if you guys remember Chris Young, the former Ranger pitcher, mm-hmm. that Highland Park kid, he went to Princeton, played basketball at Princeton. Sacramento actually drafted him.
Yep.
And because, you know, he was a really good post passer with the Princeton offense, and they'd been running it at the time. And it takes smart bigs to run that sort of thing. Well, it's a good passer offense. If you remember the Mavericks personnel when Rick first got here, they didn't have a bunch of good passers. They had frickin' Dampier and Josh Howard and all these kind of guys. So they try and, you know, install this thing, and then they're looking around and go, man, we just don't have the personnel to run this thing. But if you have good personnel, smart players like Steve Nash and Kobe Bryant and Pau Gasol, which are exceptionally high IQ players, that offense totally would have worked. I don't know if you guys remember, Sacramento just lit the league up.
Yeah, right. They had
that
Weber and Vlade are two.
They were great at that.
Yeah, great examples of guys that were great passers in their positions.
Exceptional passers. And you know, just because you have this offensive set, you guys probably remember, they also ran a ton of pick and roll with Bibby and mm-hmm. Bobby Jackson. Those guys got pick and roll situations too. It's not like one. It's like a team has one set and this is all they're going to do. But
my whole point going into that whole spiel about the Princeton is because the reason I think Rick probably wanted to bring it in here is because, one, Rick was brought in here because Avery Johnson's offense was stagnant. There was so much standing around, and Dirk bailed us out, and it made Dirk very, very frustrated. It totally underutilized one of the greatest passers in the history of basketball, who was just standing around. So they wanted to get an offense in here that had a lot of movement to it. And Rick's, I think, you know, based on whatever little conversations I've had with him, just the things that he's said, likes the aspect of the Princeton where it's extremely difficult to guard because it's hard to set up your help defense because three or four different options could happen out of wherever the ball is. And so it's different than going, all right, here's a high screen roll with these two players. Here's his tendency. Here's how we're going to set these guys up. It's totally different than that because the second the defense reads how you're set up, well, the guy's going to make a completely different cut. And so it's similar. There's a random nature to what it is. It's organized, you know, what he's calling actions. And so the next best thing to that is really good players who play well together playing pickup basketball because it's really hard to set up a defense for that. You know, that he always talks about the random nature of it. So when you get into a 6- and 7-game series where they're going to sit down and do, I mean, imagine, there's a couple times where I've been to an NBA, I got to sit in an NBA practice and watch these guys try and set up defense for a game that you're going to play in 6 hours, you know, the night before you're playing somebody else. It's a tough thing to do. Mm-hmm. But once you get through the playoffs and all you're doing is focusing on this one team, that's a totally different story. And so I think, you know, what he wants is you kind of got to take your licks until the guys feel good about it. But he wants, by the time they get to the playoffs, to have an unpredictable offense that's efficient. Not wild offense, not guys jacking up crazy shots, just things that have a random element to it so it's harder to defend. And if you can play that style efficiently and you have good guys, you know, that can move the ball around, you can get stops. The best way to get into those sorts of offenses is in transition, and not even so much 3-on-1, 2-on-1 pass breaks. Just transition by its very nature is going to put a guy at odds because you have cross matches. Because you don't have time to just get set up in the defense. You got to grab the nearest guy and make sure he's not scoring. So you get mismatches, and you take advantage of those things. And so it takes recognition. It takes smarts. It takes guys understanding where each other wants to be. And once you get that thing down, then you can do what that 2011 team did. You know, they defended. They made great passes. They took advantage of opportunities. And then at the end of the day, they had one absolute beast that could get them points in a half-court set. And Rick's even mentioned this. Sometimes it's just going to come down to whether or not you have the beast that can make the play when it matters most. And they know exactly what you're going to do, and they simply can't stop you. So all of this is leading up to, can I get this group of guys playing a style of basketball that's efficient yet random, therefore difficult to defend?
And that's kind of what Carlisle's talked about along the way, where he says they don't run plays. It's just something that has multiple options layered within the set circumstances, and he wants it to get to that point, but it's just clearly not.
Yeah, and I'd love to be a fly on the wall with Rick and Collison in there breaking down tape, because how do you take something like that and then try to simplify it effectively enough that you can help to kind of grow him into it and put him in a position to succeed? You know, because
I don't know this for a fact, but it really goes down to like what they pulled him to show him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like that's part of the process of what Shed and those guys go in there and they break down tape and, hey, we did this. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to sell this thing like they don't have sets. They have sets and they have places that they want to be and those sorts of things. But a lot of it, too, has to do with taking advantage of transition situations. And it also, you know, utilizes the other guys on the floor knowing where to go first. I mean, really, honestly and truly, you know, if you just want to be as basic as you can be, modern offensive basketball is all about spacing and matchups. You want to create as much space as possible. You know, there's the Lakers just came through here, and sometimes you can talk to some of their people, and they're trying to trade Gasol right now, according to a lot of these people, because they want someone who can space the floor better than Gasol can. And I think that's why when Nash is back, you're going to see a lot more playing time for Jody Meeks.
Right.
Just for the simple fact is that You can't just leave that guy wide open in the corner. So, you know, you start running high pick and roll stuff and the floor is completely spaced, You know, that's not going to be like some dead set offense where guys go to certain points at certain times. That's going to be, we're going to completely space the floor, and we're going to make you stop Nash and Howard. And once you start committing these guys on the weak side to do that, well, Nash will find that guy sitting wide open in the corner to knock down a three. Or it's the per- and we saw it during the championship run with Marion. He was the master at the perfectly timed dive cut,
mm-hmm.
knowing exactly when to cut down that lane. He knew when his man was cheating. He knew the angle to take, and those guys did a good job of finding him. There's a scale to all that. But it takes time to develop that and understand the timing and know, well, if this guy's going to be in this part of the floor, this is the area where I'm going to do the cut and those sorts of things. And, you know, right now it's just a hodgepodge. And, you know, I'd be lying to you if I told you I knew what they were running in Indiana. I mean, I know that they ran a ton of post-oriented stuff, but I don't know the kind of stuff Carlson's been running, and I don't know if he's accustomed to this sort of type of decision-making. But he's clearly struggled. And you can just see it in his body language. Sometimes he's playing great, and when they get stopped, they can get traditional 2-on-1 and 3-on-2. He looks great, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's real obvious sort of fundamental basketball stuff, where that's not having to make these real sort of critical decisions. That's just playing. I think he's done well with that. It's, you know, getting into, okay, wait, what do I want to do here? Is this guy in the right place? There's so many times where there's 12 seconds to go and they haven't even really initiated anything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's mess.
It is. It's something that they're gonna have to work on. Before we let you go, I know we want to get you back to your viewing of the Knicks and Nets, which I'm sure is riveting television tonight. But
actually, OKC and I think Charlotte are having a much tougher dogfight of a game. I believe it was 64-24.
That's
at
tough.
Halftime,
that's
so
tough right there.
Ooh.
That's gonna blow up. That's gonna be the highest rated on League Pass tonight for sure.
Before we let you go, we wanted to let you know that we're doing a white boy bracket in terms of ballers who are actually white, and we figured you'd have some keen insight in this realm of basketball. We have 32 guys battling it out to be the supreme white boy on the floor. And when you hear that, who are some names that are going to pop up in your head?
Well, like, are we including, like, the Euros as white
yes,
boys? Or
yes.
Are we doing, okay. Well, I mean, I think you got to have Dirk in the mix.
Yes.
Like, are we going just straight baller, or is there, like, swagger involved?
It's going to be everything. It's me and Ryland, so it's going to be mixed of everything. Maybe they're listening to hip-hop that day, and we're going to really like that or whatever.
Okay.
But it's everything. We've got the bracket set up, so we're going to get it jumping tonight, but we'd love to hear some dark horses from your point of view.
I think one of the real underrated white boys was Tom Chambers. I think Tom Chambers was a baller. I think he should get some consideration, and I think there's a chance that he might not because of the way he parted his hair. And I think that'd be a real crime.
What about the guys going today?
White boys playing today, obviously, the first guy, you know, we got Dirk in there. The first guy that comes to my mind is Kevin Love, an absolute animal beast. The second he added the step back three pointer, it was curtains.
Yeah,
he immediately became a top 20 player in the league. So interesting. Now this could be real controversial from a racial standpoint. Are the Spaniards white boys?
We're throwing everyone. I mean, we stopped at Jeremy Lin. We did not let Jeremy Lin in, but we've let pretty much everyone. We probably sound racist because we didn't let the Asian in, but
no. But Brian was pretty broad with his qualifications.
You guys know I love me some Rubio.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
That's why he was broad with his qualifications.
I mean,
because
me and
he
you,
loves
Skin,
Rubio.
We're totally in Rubio's camp. There's no doubt in that.
Okay, you know what I would do? It may be controversial. I might include Mark Gasol and not Powell. I might just do that and try and make somebody stop me from doing it is one way that I would look at that. I mean, he's got like he's an incredible passer, and that beard is nuts. And you can go high or low with him, and he's a guy that Zebo respects. So I think that, you know, once you add all that up, I think Mark Gasol is a real hoss. One guy that since we're going, Euro, I think Dragic is pretty sassy. I think he's the kind of guy that's got full mad swagger tilt.
What? Okay, so just so we're doing modern white boy ballers then.
Yeah, let me. We've got to tell you the names of these brackets. They're total white boy
the region,
names.
The region names.
The first one we changed is now the Crocs bracket or the Crocs region. That's led by Pau Gasol right now as the number one seed. And the wearing long sleeves with shorts region, that is Kevin Love as the number one seed. In the back,
because he's from the Northwest.
Well, that ended up working. He was the number one overall seed, so he got his home turf. In the backpacking through Europe region, which I'm actually going to change right now, Dirk is the number one seed in the backpacking through Europe region.
Good.
And then in the running a marathon region, Blake Griffin is the number one seed.
That is so weird that he got in as a white boy. Fascinating.
We thought it was the red hair is what swayed it.
I mean, if
the red hair makes it to your head, then I mean, red hair's tough. Ask Brian Scalabrine; it's tough on a baller. So,
there's no doubt, and it's fascinating too because you guys are just totally flying in the face of whatever the person taking the census would say.
Yes,
absolutely.
So yes.
Boy, that is revolutionary.
And we even talked about that off the air last week, how we just totally spit in the face of the census.
Yep.
So is it cool to have just like corny dudes in there that don't
We've got eight seeds of Steve Novak, Troy Murphy, Matt Bonner, and Steve Blake. Those are your eight seeds.
Okay, so Jimmer's in there?
Yes. Yes, he is in there.
Yeah, Brian called him my boy, and I've never even uttered his name on this show.
I just randomly throw Rylan some boys right there, and he has to stick with
him. I like to consider Jimmer. He's like the white Johnny Flynn with range, I think is like how I would describe his game. Okay, and so it's all current guys. There's no old school cast.
We're going to eventually have to throw in the old school guys in there because you got to mix the old and the new. But we went with the new.
That'll produce a very meritorious discussion of people that are really good. I mean, now you know your bottom half of your bracket's just a clown on, and then you get to talking about the top guys anyway. So, yeah, we'll really be able to get into that.
I think one thing that might be fascinating is if you went with if you like really tricked it up and you went with one region that was just straight modern day ballers, you went with one region that was straight classic ballers, dude who aren't in the league anymore, but obviously just, you know, their presence is still felt. One region that was Euro white boys, so like you had to give America some love and then you give Euro their own region. You could mix it up with current and old if you wanted, although the old wouldn't be older than like what, you know, Marshall Onis or Petrovic or whatever.
Right.
And then one of just straight corny dudes. Like, you know, it could be modern or old, like you might have Danny Vrains in there. I don't know, I'm just workshopping this, you know. I'm just thinking out loud and just throwing some ideas and seeing what sticks. But you know, there's always got to be room for the corny dude. Just some corny white boy that his teammates clowned on, but he just figured out some way to give you 12 hard minutes. So, you know, like probably the way Brian Cardinal was before he validated himself with being a key member of a championship team.
You could probably
remember before Cardinal got here, he was a punchline for all of us because of the time when he was getting the big contract. But once he got here, we all loved him and thought differently of him. You know, he, in a lot of ways, he's you know, I think probably like the way people feel about Reggie Evans. I think, you know, that's how people, like if Cardinal wasn't on your team, that's what you thought of Cardinal. But like, we love Cardinal in a way that we never realized we could love him, you know what I'm saying?
As far as I know, though, Brian Cardinal didn't touch people in the no-no spot, so.
But he was totally down to punch you there if he had to.
Yeah.
Like if Coach said, "Dog, you got to go punch him."
Yeah, he did what he had to do. We could almost form an entire region of those guys from, I think Brian and I talked about this last year, like the Milwaukee Bucks from like 91 and 92 to 93. Oh. They had like Larry Krzyzewski, Danny Shays, Brad Lowhouse, Frank Borkowski, all on the same roster at the same time. That would be
its own bracket.
They were the masters of the 6'10" forwards, white forward center.
All of those dudes looking up to Paul McCaskey so much, just being a hero for all those guys. Yeah, there's no doubt about it.
And Fred Roberts and Dave Popson. I just pulled this up.
Those guys are on that team too. Popson was on that team.
Frank Borkowski, Larry Krzyzewski, Brad Lowhouse, Dave Popson, Fred Roberts, and Danny Shays. That's 6 out of 15.
That's nasty.
Boy, I can't believe that team played in Milwaukee.
And Del Harris coached him to 8-9 record before he was replaced.
He's like, I'm out.
He looked down the bench and said,
I'm out of here.
I'm good, guys.
Yeah, I'm good.
I'm so good on this.
He's like, Nelly, what'd you leave me?
I gotta, once you guys settle in on some seedings, man, I gotta know what's up. This is a good undertaking. I like it.
I like this one too. That's gonna be a long term project.
Yeah,
right there.
We're gonna steal your idea. You sound like a guy who's made a few brackets in your time, and
I'll fiddle fart around with a bracket from time to time. And the key is like really making sure those regions represent a certain aspect of the overall good of what you're trying to do. Like if you can really like get some guys that fit into a region that just You say the name of the region, like, oh, there's no doubt that guy belongs in that region. Like, there's no sort of debate. It's like, it's obvious. That's when, you really hit on proper seeding.
I definitely agree. We definitely appreciate you taking the time. I felt like we learned a whole hell of a lot in this segment right now just through your skin science brain. So we definitely appreciate you taking the time to drop that knowledge on us. And we know where we can find you every day from 9 to noon.
Yes.
Yep, Cade. Good thing that we're all better people for what we've just done, and I think that's the important thing, gentlemen.
Exactly. Well, Skin.
All right, I love you.
I love you more.
Fine Analysis, 9 to noon, tune in. Make it a priority. All
right. Yeah.
All right, dude. Bye. Thanks, Skin. We will see you.
Later.
So, what are we going to do now,
Nuggets.
Man? All right, Nuggets, but first, a break.
A break. Science.
Featuring the greatest band in the world, More Than the Time.
Bottle cap.
You always think about
bottles.
Glass bottles.
Love it.
I'm thinking it's a clave sound on a drum machine tuned way up.
But he'll throw it down.
Because when you're Prince in 1981 or whatever, that's all you do is sit in front of your drum machine and tweak every little
knob. Or just having chicks come in and say what you want.
Yeah, that too, clearly. Mavericks Outsider Report, we're back. Bottom half of the second hour. Riding in down the home stretch of episode 66. About time to talk about some NBA nuggets. Going to take a look around the league, see what's making news. What are people talking about? And what's making headlines? And look at it through our Mav-colored glasses, which Brian wears. They appear clear, but those are actually Mav-colored. Oh, shit.
I forgot about that.
Dude, you're so useful.
Forgot about that.
Let's get right to it. First nugget.
Nice. News kind of blew up. What day was this? The 21st. Kevin Love came back. It was a massive surprise. They were like, hey, I'm back.
Yeah, I watched a tail end of a game Minnesota was playing in, I think, against Portland on League Pass the other day, and he looked back to me, bro.
He's nasty, man.
Can I mention, by the way, I thought about this when Skin mentioned him. You will not find a dude in Kevin Love who looks more different with and without a beard. Did you see the picture of him that circulated this summer without a beard? He looks like 12.
Yeah, but I get what you're saying, though.
I mean, and he's man beast with
he's
the
not
beard.
Pulling down nasty double
and
doubles.
Then, he gets rid of the beard and he looks seriously 12. It was pretty shocking. But he is back. I'm sure that as someone who's pulling hard for the Wolves, that makes you happy. It makes me happy just because
I'm pulling more hard just for Rubio. I like the Wolves as a team.
Anybody who's connected to Rubio, you're
happy. I love Love, and I love Rubio. So both of them together, I'm down for that.
I just don't like a young and highly talented player, especially one like him who's coming up and early in his career and is unique. I feel like he's very unique in what he does, I hate to see anybody like that hurt, whether they're my team or not, unless they're a Laker or a Spur. I really want them back just because it's fun to watch them play. It's good for the league. It's good for basketball fans everywhere. So I'm glad he's back. I did enjoy watching Minnesota a little bit play against Portland. I think I may quasi-adopt Minnesota.
Western Conference team.
Are you still
adopting the Pacers?
A little bit. I need to tune in and see how they're looking. With Granger out, though...
Not as fun.
Here's the thing. When you're adopting teams, you get to be fair weather.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think with the Granger thing and the fact that I haven't gotten into him yet this year, with the Granger thing happening, I may just go mini. I mean, it's easier for me to accept a Western Conference team knowing that the Mavs are kind of in an in-between year anyway. So the thing is, though, is I want him to be a West Coast team so that I can watch him at night when I'm going to sleep. So I may just adopt whoever's playing in Portland.
The hot team.
I like the hot West Coast Portland team, though.
Apparently, LaMarcus Aldridge is kind of getting a little old quick.
No, not my guy.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, now he's your guy?
I've always liked him.
You don't want Jimmer, though?
Why are you trying to give me Jimmer?
What do I have to do to get you in a Jimmer for debt today?
Fine. I got nothing.
Okay.
You're trying to sell me a Nissan Altima.
Yes.
Yeah. Is he really? Is this another nugget?
I've heard that he's... Is this like
a half nugget?
Half nugget. Yeah. Apparently he said, I can't remember the quote, but it was saying that I lost a lot of energy all of a sudden.
What? Man, you better get checked out.
I'm gonna have to do some more research on that. I think it was just within the scope of one game, but it's kind of disconcerting.
Ryan.
No, I think it's part of a big long-term outlook, though.
I need to know more about that.
I'll have to do some.
Let's follow up on that.
It was a half nugget.
Put on your intrepid reporter hat and let's figure that out. That's concerning to me. I like LaMarcus. I like that team. I like that kid they got, Lillard or whatever. Obviously, I've talked about Nick Batum several times on this show. So maybe I'll watch them when it's late at night and I'm going to sleep. But anyway, Minnesota, I'm sure you're happy. I'm happy for Kevin Love. I'm happy for the beard.
I'm just waiting for him to walk through that door.
I'm happy for JJ.
What is he? What is he?
Sorry.
The little porker. Yeah, that boy. I'm just waiting.
I was looking for it. I was too slow.
I'm waiting for that day to look through the door and he walks through, bright light behind him. And that nice Spanish beard.
J.J. Barrera.
No, not that one. I want to see Rubio walk through with two happy and healthy knees, ready to ball.
Yeah, it'll be cool. It'll be fun to watch. They were fun to watch last year before he got hurt. So
got hurt playing defense, dude.
I know, dude. Who gets hurt playing defense? Come on, you don't play defense.
No.
Actually, everybody should play defense. Old man sports fan says so.
Next nugget. Rajon Rondo just passes the hell out of the ball.
Yeah, he does.
He has now had 37 games consecutive with double-digit assists.
What do you make of the Twitter consternation? I think he must have had a game where he kind of...
Forced it?
He kind of forced an assist to get to 10. Do you remember this? It was three or four days ago.
I heard about it.
Some people were kind of calling bullsh on him.
I'm not that... I mean...
You still got to get to 9.
He's not a dude that's going at it for the stats. He's a dude that's playing to win.
That doesn't bother me because I don't care, dude. It's whatever. Ricky Davis, remember when Ricky Davis had his little thing to get his triple-double
and
about
10
years ago?
And their ugly Cleveland Cavaliers jersey with white and
awful.
And blue, like awful. Baby blue. Doesn't even make sense.
We should revisit remember a couple years ago we did the segment on how terrible the uniforms were in the 90s? That was the aughts, but that was a carryover. Man, those were some bad uniforms. Anyway, all that stuff doesn't bother me. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's because I'm kind of birthed from baseball where numbers are king and funny things happen to get stats all the time. I don't care. One guy, clanking one off the rim to get his own offensive rebound when he's all alone. It doesn't affect the game. I don't know. There's a lot of crazy weird crap that happens in the course of a basketball game that may or may not be judged as wholly legitimate to receive a stat. Particularly assist, because there's some judgment involved in there, because, if a guy takes more than one dribble before he shoots or whatever, there's supposed to be some kind of very hard and fast guidelines, and I think home scorer versus road scorer, you're not going to be getting the benefit of the doubt. It's all subjective anyway, but that's why it just doesn't bother me, because also, I like Rondo.
And so now he's chasing the record.
And like most humans, I just back who I like.
He's chasing Magic Johnson, who has the record of 46.
So how many is he at? 20-something?
37.
Whoa!
So he's within striking distance. I'm thinking that's going to be around Christmas time where he has a chance to catch that.
Man, that's crazy, man. To be creeping up on Magic? I'd like to know where John Stockton lies on that. He's got to have a streak up there
Stockton
somewhere.
Stockton has the second. He matched it. 37.
Oh, so he's passing Stockton?
Yes.
I like Stockton. That's okay.
He's the dude that couldn't get noticed in Barcelona.
I love it. I loved that.
That was a great documentary. That documentary has to be one of the best sports ones ever.
Next, I agree.
Next nugget. Zach Randolph was fined $25,000.
Wait a minute.
Yes. Uh-oh. What's breaking?
Thunder now lead the Bobcats 84-35.
Wow. What happened to Charlotte, man? They were on a hot streak. They're winning games.
Well, I don't know what happened, but it's not happening
tonight. They found out that they were Charlotte again.
Man, have you ever... Can you remember a game where one team had 80, more than 80 and had doubled up on the other team?
No, it almost happened the other night ago.
It's pretty damn close. We almost saw it firsthand.
Yes. No, I don't.
Man,
but that
crazy.
Does not... When you tell me those two teams, I'm not surprised with that score.
No. Although Kenny Bybee, one of our boys, points out on Twitter that the Bobcats have more wins than the Mavs right now.
That's hard.
Yeah.
That's hard, man. And they beat the Mavericks.
He said he actually started his tweet by saying, "Pray for Cardboard Gerald." Oh, never mind.
No. He's living life right now.
Yeah, they're good. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
No,
your nugget.
You're fine. That's a good breaking news. 25K. Yeah. 25K for Zach Randolph after getting in a little skirmish with Kendrick Perkins last week. They both got ejected from the game. But apparently, they were, what is that?
It's a pin.
They were trying to be restrained, or they were restrained in the tunnels.
They were having a little Stack and Kirk Snyder action going on.
Who would be Stack in that? It would have to be Zeebo then.
Yeah, come on, man. Perk is fake soft, fake tough, fake everything.
Yeah. So, yeah, they were having that kind of skirmish, and they had to be... held back.
The only reason anybody thinks that guy's tough is because his mouth just naturally forms into a frown. He was just born that way.
So yeah, 25K for Zeebo for that.
I think it was someone who said on Twitter, I can't remember who it was, that they were kind of just bandying about the idea of who would you take in a fight between these two. And
between these specific two?
Yeah, the...
Well, I'd take Zeebo all day.
The sentiment, though, was, hey, they're both basketball players, so you really wouldn't want to take either one. Because, you know, the joke always is that basketball players don't really fight. They just kind of slap fight.
Right.
Kind of like how baseball players don't really fight. They just kind of all run out there and stand around.
Yeah, so, waste 10 minutes.
Yeah. That's kind of how it is. I mean, except in hockey.
They fight hard.
You see a little something now and then in football, but again, there's so much padding.
Yeah.
You really can't do much.
It's and there's no fights.
It's a shoving.
It's just a 60-minute fight, basically.
You get a little shoving match every once in a while after a play, and, you know, guy gets flagged, and it's all over. So I guess it's good. I don't need fights in my sport. I've always said the reason hockey allows fights is because the fighting is better than the sport.
It is.
If the sport is better than the fighting, then the magic of the free market and Adam Smith would dictate that you would stop the fight to continue with the sport.
Right.
But since you allow the fight to progress, you're implicitly admitting that your sport blows.
And meanwhile, hockey is still dormant.
Yeah. And my dad was here over the weekend for Thanksgiving. My mom was too, but my dad is relevant to this story. My dad's hilarious. You can, no matter what you have on TV, if you're watching news, whether it's like cable news or Sports Center or whatever, he doesn't listen to anything. He only reads what's going on the bottom. And he'll comment on that completely out of context. Something showed up about the hockey season and just dry, deadpan as anything. He just goes, "I don't know what I'm going to do without hockey." This is a guy who wouldn't know Mike Modano if Mike Modano came and just
gave him a business card and said, "This is Mike
Modano."
Pushed
him in the chest. He would have no idea. He wouldn't know. He might be able to recognize Wayne Gretzky. Maybe.
Really?
Maybe. And that's a stretch. He has no interest in hockey whatsoever. So I thought that was funny.
It is funny.
And I'm glad there's no hockey. It's a great world.
It's a different world.
Hockey.
No one cares, though. No one in this part of the town.
No.
No.
Except Bob Sturm.
That's about it.
He's hurting. His heart is hurting. He has a big hole.
He's okay. And I hope he gets that looked at.
next nugget.
We're going to the white boy bracket.
There we go.
Let's go. We're going to just chop down through this. And if we tie, we'll have to figure out a quick tiebreaker.
All right.
So let's go to the Crocs bracket.
Okay.
Gasol versus Novak.
Well, I mean, that's obvious.
Yes. This one's tough. Kamen versus Pekovic. I'm going Pekovic.
I'm going Pekovic, too. I mean, I can't get the taste of that Laker game out of my mouth, man.
So the 5-seed advances. Luis Scola.
It is.
It's tough to get that taste out of your mouth. Luis Scola versus Ryan Anderson.
Russell Brand all day.
Yeah, I'll go with that too. Nash versus Mr. Forehead and his cancer.
I love the lack of a forehead. Steve Nash's resume, obviously.
Yes.
It's kind of like I said to Skin, the bottom half of this bracket is generally just a clown on guys.
It's going to be interesting once we get further on. Okay, going to the wearing long sleeves with shorts. bracket.
Which, if you were wondering, each of these brackets is named after things that white people love to do.
They're very stereotypical white honky things.
Seriously,
to
do you not believe that wearing long sleeves with shorts is a purely white person thing?
Except for me.
Except for you, which is so weird, dude.
I do it. It's versatile.
How's it versatile?
If it's warm,
aren't
roll
your
it
arms
up.
Hot?
No.
See, if it's warm, I can't have roll up.
No, I'm fine with
constriction.
That. I'm fine with
it. I gotta have freedom.
And if it's cold,
airflow.
Roll it down.
I gotta have airflow under the sleeves. I gotta have flow.
I'm okay.
You know how the Cowboys in Texas Stadium when it would be 142 degrees on the field, and I'm sure they even do it now in early season. Although, who would know? Because I fall asleep during every game because they suck. I do. I fall asleep every game. Anyway, you know they have that little air tube that they plug into the back of their shoulder pad. I need that just for life. I need really from about May to October. I just need one of those on my whole body. I'm part Eskimo or something.
Maybe.
Anyway, things white people do.
Wearing long sleeves with shorts. Number one seed, Kevin Love versus Troy Murphy. Dude, Troy Murphy got a start this week, dude.
Yeah, he did. Merry Christmas. Hey, is this our last nugget?
Yes.
Okay. Keep going.
Nick Collison versus Jose Calderon.
Put me down for Collison.
Yeah, I'm
man.
Going Collison too. Okay, we're not Ricky Rubio. Oh yeah,
bracket
yeah.
music.
Yes, this is Ricky Rubio versus Spencer Hawes.
Dude, nobody's voting against Rubio. This is Brian Gutierrez's bracket. He's going to win the whole thing.
We'll see.
He's going to beat Dirk, Kevin Love.
Well, if it plays out, Love and Rubio will have to play it out in this regional final.
The Battle of the T-Wolves.
Goran Dragic versus Amara Sheik.
Dragic. Speaking of, and we can talk about this at some point as kind
of
an aside.
I love this music, by the way.
But I was watching the Suns play somebody. They had an overtime game against the Hornets the other night. Mm-hmm. It was still going, and it was late, and so I flipped it over and watched. And I was just watching him sort of, you know, ply his craft and trying to imagine what the ceiling of this Mavs team would be with him in the mix.
And that would be a fun discussion.
And what they would have had to pay for him to do it. We mm-hmm. need to do that. And, you know, we should do that. We could save it for a segment when we have a guest.
I might need to do a roundtable. I need to get some audio from people.
Yeah, I think that's interesting because that's one that, of all the ones that are out there,
he was the most realistic.
I'm not even having this conversation in the context of what Darren Collison is or isn't doing on the court because I'm all about being patient with Collison.
We know you're fine with just
I'm right the, on the. Yeah. I'm totally on the wagon with seeing that through. But what you just said, he was a realistic fit, a realistic get for them in terms of what he could bring and his age. And, you know, we both felt like he was a little expensive mm-hmm. given his resume, but, you know, that's kind of the state of the union right now in the NBA. So, mark it down.
Yeah, marking it down. Noted. Okay, so we are now going to the running a marathon portion.
Because white people love to run in marathons and post about it on Facebook.
And they put stickers.
Oh, my God. Here's my question. If you are, you know, 28 years old, well, this is more because a lot of people in my hometown do this, and in my hometown, to be 28 and have children is not out of the ordinary. But, you know, around here, most people are just barely starting to have a kid at that time. But anyway, if you're in your late 20s, early 30s, and you have like a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old or a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old or whatever, how in the hell do you have time to go train for something that requires you to go run for like 3 hours in your training? Like you just saw, we were on baby duty. The reason we were 5 minutes late is because we were on baby duty. We both were, Brian and I. I was on baby duty because Courtney was working out and she was coming back and she was just going to get
it. It could have
like
been
right
3 minutes
a
baby, but.
But TK is Cyber Mondaying it. Dude, if he's still working, God, he's miserable. I feel sorry for him, but he's probably not. Surely he's not anymore. Anyway.
Don't call him Shirley.
Anyway, you know, you saw what it is just to have one kid that can't even crawl.
Mm-hmm.
You
run with the baby.
You just put the baby in the little baby Bjorn thing and you just run. Anyway, that's my beef on. I don't understand you people in your marathons.
That's your HSO.
A half marathon, maybe, just because the time it takes to build up to that is less. Also, guess what? The guy in Greece died. Your body's not supposed to do that.
It's really not supposed to.
Sorry for the aside.
No, it's a good aside. Blake Griffin versus Matt Bonner.
I love love these 1/8s.
Does Bonner even put up a fight?
I love these 1/8s.
Does he just get dunked on so hard?
Bonner is the guy that I clown on every time we play the Spurs, and then we leave his ass wide open just standing there like he's not even in uniform, and he drops like 3 threes on us.
What about, I mean, he's got the name the Red Rocket.
He's got, and I call him Boner, which is funny because you brought up Boner from
Growing Pains
the other day.
It's full circle, basically. What's going on over there?
Where?
Right there.
I was trying to type my password like six times.
Okay.
I'm just an idiot.
Gets a little bit interesting now. JJ Barea or Danilo Gallinari?
Give me Barea because of... Oh, no. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of Bellinelli. Sorry.
No.
Sorry.
Does that change it?
I get them mixed up. I don't know, dude. Sorry. I'm having another one of those cough attacks. It's a push for me. What do you think?
I'm going Barea.
All right. Okay.
It was a 4-5, so it was tough. It was tough.
I'm a JJ homer. I'm not afraid to admit that. I like the guy. I root for the guy.
For sure. For sure.
For sure.
For sure. Marcin Gortat versus your homeboy who I just sold to you, Jimmer Fredette.
Dude, I like Gortat.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of Gortat.
That should be another one, too. I mean,
if he had come along,
wouldn't have gotten Tyson Chandler.
That's kind of like, what if Marty McFly went back in time and, you know, then, you know, that's like asking for too much space-time continuum stuff.
Someone's losing an arm. No one's being born.
And you're just fading away on your picture, trying to play your guitar, and your hand is—you can see through your hand.
That's a great trilogy.
Man. I love Back to the Future.
Great trilogy.
I could do a segment on just Back to the Future. Hell, I could do a show.
Marc Gasol versus Kyle Korver.
Of course, Marc Gasol. Yes. I think that was a very astute point made by Skin.
He's going to be a dark horse.
Dude,
I like Gasol.
He's nasty.
He's nasty.
I'd love to have him on the mat.
Backpacking through Europe. There's a lot of Euros in this one. That's why I decided to change it. Steve Blake and Dirk. There's no fight.
I don't know, man.
Both of them are hurt right now. So
that's tough. I don't know what to do.
Jason Kidd versus J.J. Redick.
Yeah, you got to take Kidd there.
Got to take Kidd. Andrea Bargnani versus Andre Kirilenko.
Yeah, you got to take Bargnani.
I'm actually taking Kirilenko.
Really?
I mean, he's got that free pass from his wife, that swag right there.
He had the mohawk for the longest time.
Yeah, he's got a nickname AK-47.
And plus, I'll never forget when I was introduced to the versatile game that is Andre Kirilenko.
Mm-hmm.
When he was a baby in Utah's summer league,
mm-hmm.
me and my buddy Riley G, my roommate in college, we're flipping channels there in the middle of the summer in our little apartment in College Station or Bryan or whatever. And I'm like, dude, we should watch this. Check out this summer league. You know, maybe you'll see something. He's like, why would you watch these guys? And then we're like, who's that? And we started calling him Drago.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I really wish that his name could have just been Drago. I'm
just one name like Nene?
I just wanted to – why did his number have to be 47?
I don't know.
And then they called him AK-47 because if his number hadn't been 47, I think his nickname would have been Drago.
Could have been.
That's what I'm saying.
So have I swayed you?
I'm just saying why I like Drago.
But have I swayed you to take care of Lincoln?
Yeah, man, that's whatever.
Yeah.
They're all fodder for the top six of these guys anyway.
Manu versus Gordon Haywood, Mr. West Willie.
I hate to, but you got to take Ginobili.
Okay.
I hate to, though, because I hate him.
Yeah, would you beat him in a fight?
No, I wouldn't beat anybody in a fight, but I would fight him.
Would you have beaten any of these guys in a fight?
No.
No?
No.
Jimmer? You couldn't beat Jimmer?
No, I'm not beating anybody.
He went to BYU, dude.
I'm not beating anybody in a fight.
Novak? Doesn't even know how to walk around the AAC.
He can't even find the elevator.
He cannot. I'm trying to find anyone on this list. Matt Bonner?
Soft. Overrated. Pretty boy. A bitch.
Jimmy King comes over the top of the hammer. You hear the little... Listen to the orchestration.
I like it.
Listen to the orchestration.
Overrated. Pretty boy. A bitch.
What a melodramatic dork
yes.
that was putting that music together.
That's probably Jalen Rose putting that music together.
Yeah. Jalen's in there on his garage band. He's got his finger over the keyboard just waiting. He's got his little timpani sound.
Boom.
Yeah.
You telling me you can't beat Matt Bonner in a fight?
Dude, I'm telling you, I can't beat anybody in a fight because
I know it's
I'm
been
not
a while.
An athlete. Yeah, and I haven't fought since I was in fifth grade or whatever. I told y'all the other day.
Yes.
Yeah, I said I was fifth grade. Did I tell you all the story, or was that? Man, I'm just going all over the map today. I hope that listeners don't mind. Or was I telling the story to people in real life?
No, you told me
about going to the principal's office. And that was in the era of you would get licks if you...
No, you have not.
So you would get, at least in Hamilton, you would get licks. Or, well, you would if they called your parents and said, do you want us to put him in school suspension, or do you want us to give him licks? And of course, my parents just said, beat him, you know? And that happened when I got in a fight in fourth grade at school, and that happened when I got in a fight in fifth grade at school. And then I was telling some people over the weekend that I got licks in sixth grade, and I don't even remember what the hell I did. I don't have any idea. I have no idea what I did, but I know it happened. And I can't think of what it was, man.
Talk to some people.
I don't know.
Find some people. Find a principal. Reconnect.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, you remember that time in sixth grade?
My principal at the time also coached Summer League basketball in 1996, and there was a falling out, and me and a couple other guys walked out of the game.
This was an NBA Summer League?
No, it was Hamilton County Summer League.
How intense were those Summer League games?
Not very. No. You want to talk about pickup? Skin was talking about offense like pickup. That's offense like pickup right
yes.
there.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry for the fourth aside.
That's it for Nuggets.
All right.
Quick transition into the previews. We've already talked about two of the games this week because we didn't know how the schedule for our show would work. It's a tough stretch now for the Mavericks where I believe if I pull this up, five of the next six, eight of the next 10, 16 of the next 23 are on the road.
Man, yeah, we were talking about that at the end of last week's show. There are a ton of games on the road, and this team, look, I mean, I hate to, look at me, turn into Rick, my hero. Anyway, look, I can see one of two things happening here. Either a few things start to get righted, because sometimes when teams go on the road a lot, they kind of start to, there's a galvanization that takes place. Things kind of start to happen, you know. And with this team, with this many new guys, every little bit helps. Any little thing here or there, even if it's something as stupid as travel, as a long road trip, you know, anything good that can come of that, you know, I'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, if they don't turn things around and start to see some improvement as far as consistency on the road, this could get ugly.
I mean,
it could be very ugly. And if it, and I'm not saying it's going to be, like, honestly, you know, my entire, I should pull up their schedule before I just start talking.
The tail end of December is ugly.
That's where I was going with that, was that I know it gets tough, and if they don't pull off some surprising wins somewhere along, peppered through here to give people hope, then the week to 10 days leading up to Dirk coming back, it's going to probably be malaise, wailing, gnashing of teeth in Mavs land.
Let's say, hypothetically, he comes back anywhere from the 13th to the 17th, which is somewhat realistic. That's going to come right at the time where it gets hard for the Mavericks in terms of games.
Dude, you think he's going to be back that soon?
I'm just saying, as a rough estimate, he's going to be coming in when it gets beefy. You've got Miami, Memphis on the road, San Antonio on the road, Oklahoma City on the road, Denver, San Antonio. Those are the beasts that you're going to need to beat, particularly in the Western Conference, and you've got Miami thrown in there. So it's not terrible.
Boy, their schedule's been soft.
Yes.
Man, it sucks to be 7-7 off that.
It's this first part of the stretch in December isn't terrible, but they have shown the capacity to stink it up.
It's not terrible from a standpoint of the quality of the opponents, but when you look at the number of games on the road, we said 8 of the next 10.
Mm-hmm.
Man, 8 of the next 10, you got Philly, Chicago, Clippers, Suns, Rockets, Celtics, Raptors, T-Wolves. Well, okay, you got some pretty quality teams mixed in there, and you're on the road. So
right.
And then at home, you've got Detroit and Sacramento, so surely those are both wins.
You have to get those.
If you don't get those, you got trouble.
You have to get those at all costs.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's pretty much what's coming up. That's all we really needed to touch on, is that this is the grow some hair on your chest, maybe somewhere else portion of the schedule for the Mavericks, as it's getting to that time where they need to do everything possible to keep their heads above water. They've done what they can to this point, but now it's to that point where the challenges are going to get difficult.
Yeah, let's make note for next week's show. We talked about, man, just be 500 when Dirk comes back.
Mm-hmm.
Be 500 when Dirk comes back. Be 500 when Dirk comes back. Next week's show, based on what happens over these next three games, probably before we get together again, and, you know, any other information we can glean from how the team plays and making guesses about Dirk, we need to look at what this December schedule looks like and try to figure out if they've even got a chance to be 500.
Right.
Or what the chances are. Obviously, they have a chance. You got to play the game on a court with a ball. So there is a chance. But we need to look at that because, man, it's like tough. I was saying, Clippers, tough. Suns, not terrible.
Phoenix, a gritty team.
Rockets, not terrible. Boston, tough. T-Wolves, tough, or could be by then
now
tougher.
Now tough.
You know, you got the Raps in there. They suck. Philadelphia's kind of reeling right now, I feel like. The Heat, you got the Heat in there. You got Memphis, tough.
That's going to be physical.
You got Spurs, Thunder, Denver, Spurs again, just like you said.
Mm.
Ugh. Man, I hate the Spurs.
That's...
Have I mentioned to y'all before
mm-hmm.
how much I hate those guys? I hate them so much. I need them to be so bad. But here's what's going to happen. All those old son of a bitches are all going to retire the same year, and then they're going to be 4-78 on the one year that the best big man ever comes out, because that's all they do. That's all the Spurs and the Rockets do is just poach big men out of the draft.
And the Lakers just trade for them.
And then the Lakers trade for them.
Yes, that's pretty much all it boils down to. So we will be back next week, either the 3rd or the 4th, one of the two.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe we can make a decision now. I know that our listeners love when we schedule on the air.
Both of them are open. There's dead patch between... What is that? Oh, that's the nugget machine.
Yep.
I'm open for both. Doesn't matter.
December 3rd is a no-go.
Okay.
Do we have a game on... You know, we could do the 2nd, maybe.
Could.
Or we could do the 4th.
Let's do the 4th.
All right. December 4th it is.
Booked. So yeah, we'll be back.
Jay-Z's birthday.
Is it?
Yeah, he had that song December 4th.
We'll have to have some Jay-Z inspired music for that episode then.
Remind me.
I will. December 4th is
I've
when...
I've told you to remind me of like 20 things.
Are
y'all noticing I'm taking no responsibility at all for like my own brain?
It's okay.
Let's get Brian to remind me everything.
Tim would help, but of course, he's not here.
He may be here next week.
Hopefully. And if he's not in Tijuana or just doing cyber after Monday, whatever.
Cyber aftermath.
Yeah. So we'll be back December 4th. Rylan. Where do you find us?
You can find us on the Google machine invented by Al Gore. You need to go to Google, and you need to Google Mavericks Outsider Report if you're looking for us. That'll take you to podomatic.com, which is kind of home base. It's where we've got some show archives. And you can subscribe there manually if you like to subscribe to RSS feeds. If you're kind of a geek and you know what XML is, then do that. If you're like everybody else and you use Apple, go to iTunes, search Mavericks Outsider Report. You can subscribe. It's one click. It's free. It's fun. It's awesome. You'll love it. Tell your mom, tell your dad, tell your sister, tell your brother, your cousin, your aunt, your uncle, your dog, your neighbor, your boss.
Your baby
mechanic,
that you take with you on the marathon.
Your baby that you take with you on your marathon and your baby Bjorn. Tell everybody. It's easy. It's one click, like I said. And you'll be automatically delivered to your iPod, your iPhone, iTunes on your computer, your iPad, anything.
iPad mini.
iPad mini now.
Whatever.
Crap, I got to add that to my list of things to talk about on the show. Yeah, so do that. We love it when you do. And don't be afraid. We'll
hook you.
Yeah, we'll hook you up.
We'll hook you up.
So, is there anywhere else? Oh, yeah, you know, you can always also go to ustream.tv and search for Mavericks Outside Report. We have a Ustream channel where you can stream the video. The video is unedited.
You get it raw. You just get the raw, uncensored.
You get it raw. You get us in our purest form. And sometimes that's fun to kick back and listen. There's a few little nuggets you can sometimes catch on the video that you don't catch on the audio.
There's Easter eggs.
Yep. Maybe. So there's that. And find us on Twitter. We love to interact with our listeners. We appreciate the guys that stream live with us.
Love them.
We got a solid handful of dozen or so people that come in and out just about every week.
Love them.
And take time out of their evening to hang with us, and we always appreciate that. For everybody else, find us on Twitter, Ballin' with Brian, B-R-Y-A-N. He's going to have you covered. He's got access at the games, practices, media, anything media. He's there. He's asking questions of the people who have the answers.
I try.
And he's writing articles on twomangame.com, mavsfastbreak.com. You can find anything and everything from Brian there. And you can find me on Twitter at Rylan, R-H-Y-L-A-N, Rowe, R-O-W-E.
Follow Rylan.
Just follow me. It's
follow.
Fun. You won't be disappointed, I promise.
It's great stuff.
I'll make it worth your while.
For sure.
And your wildest dreams will come true.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and say that. That's fair. So we'll be back December 4th. 2012, last month of existence.
Oh my gosh, it's the last month of the world.
Yeah, so the Mavs could end the world against a gluttony of teams and just be pummeled to death.
And then that would be the cosmic last existence memory of the Mavs. It would be just getting
but
beat down on the road.
Dirk's going to walk through that door and say, no.
Yeah.
Obviously, the season and the world are not going to end.
So what you're telling me is that the Mayans prophesied that the world would not end because Dirk is coming back.
Yes.
That Dirk would save the world.
Yes. Pretty much.
Okay.
Or
that,
not.
That I can work with.
One of the two. So, yeah, we'll be back then. Thanks again for everyone for listening. Thanks for Skin jumping on, dropping some mad
science. Always, always good to have him on. We really appreciate his time and his help. He's a good dude, and he knows his basketball.
He knows it like no
one
else.
Very deeply. It's good to have people that are willing to come on and contribute that are such well-respected basketball minds.
Yes.
Authorities, if you will, in the local sports scene.
I would agree with that, 127%.
That was specific.
It was. So thanks again for everybody, and we will see you next week.
Can't wait. Oh, let's go home.
That is a wrap.
Woo! I don't trust him. His name is Rylan. Goes crazy over such and such and such. We made ourselves a pillow. We just